Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Tuesday, February 6th. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, which ends today at 1 p.m. So we only have 3 hours with you today, but we expect to have a really action-packed program, and I hope that you stay with us. Our producer, technical operator, and the first voice you'll hear when you call us today at 43-41790 is Mr. Dennis Johnson. You can also share your thoughts with us via WhatsApp at 266-4862 and via email at brasstacks@starcom.net. Before we go to the phone lines, I want to discuss a bill that is really making the rounds today, and that's the proposed amendments to the Police Act. These amendments to the Police Act will give the police the right to oblige all persons within the curfew area to return to their homes or premises and remain indoors during the curfew hours. Now, I need to say this. One of the main things with this bill is that it will allow the police to be able to have to do cordon off districts, as well as to institute curfews. Yes, similar to what is happening in Jamaica right now. And we can see the backlash that is taking place there. But anyhow, one of the other things that the amendments will do is command all businesses in the curfew area to close and remain closed. Command all social gatherings in the curfew area to come to an end. Search all premises, without any requirement to have a search warrant once any police officer has a reasonable suspicion that any offense, no matter how minor or trivial, has been committed or is about to be committed in the said premises. Stop and search any person without any requirement to have a search warrant once any police officer has reasonable suspicion that any offense, again how trivial, has been committed or is about to be committed by that person. They can also stop and search any motor vehicle without any requirement to have a search warrant once a police officer reasonably suspects that an offense is about to be committed or has been committed. And they can require any person within the curfew area to remain stationary and refrain from carrying out any activity during that time. Now, these powers are available to the police right now, in more or less, but you'll have to have a two-thirds vote within Parliament to be able to do it. What is going to happen? What is the major change here? Is that if the Commissioner of Police has information that there's some major crime element or thoughts of anything going to be committed in a particular district, he, along with the Attorney General, can just have this curfew. My question today to you is, has violent crime reached a stage in Barbados where we need to have a bill which gives the police such tremendous power? I have on the line Mr. David Comas-Young, a human rights lawyer, and he has been extremely vocal on this. Mr. Comas-Young, David, are you there?
Yes, Sanker.
My question, has violent crime in Barbados reached a stage where we need such a bill?
Well, Sanker, I have been trying to draw on my own personal experience of experiencing a society in which a curfew was applied. I have had that experience. The year was 1970. The society was Trinidad and Tobago. At that time, in 1970, Trinidad and Tobago, the government of Trinidad and Tobago, was confronted with a massive public unrest, massive demonstrations, acts of arson. And in the midst of that public unrest, the army mutinied and attempted to violently overthrow the government of Trinidad and Tobago. And it was in those circumstances that a curfew was imposed on the country. We also have the recent example of Montego Bay in Jamaica, where it almost seems as if some kind of civil conflict is going on in that area of Jamaica. Dozens of murders, people opening fire even on funeral gatherings. So it is that kind of situation, almost a situation of civil unrest, that lends itself to the imposition of a curfew. Because, mind you, let's understand what a curfew is, you know. A curfew takes away important constitutional rights of the citizen. Under the Constitution of Barbados, for example, every citizen has the right not to be deprived of his or her personal liberty. Every citizen has the right not to be subjected to the search of his or her personal property or the entry by others onto their premises. Every person has the right of freedom of movement in their country. A curfew takes away all of that. A curfew says that for the period of the curfew, and under this act, bear in mind, this act does not stipulate what the curfew hours are to be. So it could be a 24-hour curfew. It could be a curfew where over a period of 2 days, those communities, the people living in those communities, can totally lose their freedom, required to remain in their homes or premises, not move therefrom. And under these curfew conditions, basically, what this legislation is saying is that the police will basically have the right to do as they please in relation to searches of homes, of individuals, and of motor vehicles. Because when legislation tells you that all that is required to justify a search is for a police officer to have reasonable suspicion that any kind of offense has either been committed or maybe is intended to be committed. Any kind of offense, not an arrestable offense, not a felony, any kind of offense. Basically, what you're saying is you are giving the police carte blanche, full liberty to stop and search. Search premises, search individuals, and vehicles. So that is what I hope the Barbadian people understand, that is what is being proposed with this legislation.
But David, some people would say to you, we want the government to be hard on crime. We want to live in peace and safety. We need these laws. We need to give the police, the authority to do these things because we need such laws. If, for example, that situation that happened in Deacon's Farm the other day, somebody last year, when there was the shooting, and then the police moved in, and the guys just seemed to disappear. If the police could have cordoned off the entire area and slapped on a curfew, so there could be no movement whatsoever in that Deacon's Road area. They may have found the guns and the people who were shooting all over the place. How do you respond to that?
Well, clearly one can envisage circumstances where these kinds of measures might be required. As I indicated in my opening comments, those would have to be very extreme circumstances, because when you're talking about depriving entire communities of their freedoms, that can only be justified in very extreme circumstances. But let us concede that certain extreme circumstances could arise where these kinds of measures are justified. However, the question then becomes, who makes that determination? I personally do not feel comfortable with Attorney General Adriel Brafitt and our commissioner of police making that determination. I do not feel comfortable with simply those two officers of the state, the commissioner of police and the attorney general, by themselves, accountable to no one, with no oversight, making that determination. Under our currently existing constitutional regime, the imposition of a curfew is part of emergency powers that would be granted if it is determined that some kind of public emergency exists, either throughout the entire island of Barbados or in particular areas of the Barbadian nation. And for those kind of powers to be triggered, Parliament has to get into the act. The Governor General has to get into the act. There has to be a vote, both in the House of Assembly and in the Senate. So there's oversight. There are political representatives of the people who can question those who are claiming that an extreme situation exists that justifies the suspension of the constitutional rights of the Barbadian people. In other words, it would be a collective decision, and there would be some mechanism for properly questioning the rationale, etc.
I'm much more
comfortable with that scenario mm-hmm. than with these two officers of the government.
You're not speaking about these two particular gentlemen, but you're speaking about any attorney general and any commission.
Any attorney general.
But just briefly, some police would argue that you have to move swiftly with these things. In other words, you know that there's a situation that has developed. You have this tip, and you have to move swiftly. You can't go through the entire process of going to Parliament, calling Parliament, and that sort of stuff. That some mechanism needs to be put in place where the police have the authority to do this, because this is the only way to react to violent crime.
Well, I would say to you that thus far, we have seen no evidence that Barbados is anywhere near to that kind of state of criminal unrest that these kind of powers are required. But in any event, Barbados is a small country. If there needs to be an emergency meeting of the House of Assembly, that can be done in the twinkling of an eye. You could have a procedure where the House meets. The Commissioner of Police is on standby. A closed-door meeting of the House of Assembly, the political representatives of the people, the case for the curfew is put by the Attorney General. The political representatives of the people consider that case, ask the relevant questions in a closed meeting of the House of Assembly. Mm-hmm. The Commissioner of Police is on standby. If the House of Assembly gives its approval, that information is immediately relayed to the Commissioner of Police. He can immediately move into action. The point is about democratic accountability. And that brings me to the crux of this matter. You know, we are supposed to be living in a democracy. When we, the people of Barbados, elect a government, we are not electing a slave master class. We are electing politicians who are supposed to operate in terms of democratic principles. Now, it is not every piece of legislation that the political class should feel obliged to consult the people of Barbados on. But where you are talking about a piece of legislation that has implications for the fundamental constitutional rights of the people, how can you in all good conscience go through no process of public consultation, give the Barbadian people no forewarning that this is coming, and simply push it through the House of Assembly with no opportunity for the people to be forewarned, for the people to express an opinion. You know, if the Barbadian people, having been given all of the information, having had a chance to think about this, to consult about this, if they said, look, this is okay with me, then, you know, who am I to object to that? Anybody would have to concede. The people have said that they are willing to give up these rights. But in this case, the people have not had an opportunity to think about it, to talk about it, to give some feedback to the members of parliament, and this is not right.
Fair enough. Two things. One, I heard you talking about having a specially convened meeting of parliament, that can be done in certain emergency cases so that you can make a quick decision. But what happens, let's suppose this thing happened just next month after parliament has been dissolved. What do you do then? There's only the commissioner of police and the attorney general that you can go to.
Sanka,
but the constitution only recognizes the prime minister and the attorney general.
Sanka, we are talking as if the nation of Barbados was born yesterday. We have celebrated what this year will be 52 years of life as an independent nation. We have laws in place to protect the public order and the security of Barbados. Thus far, those laws have not failed us. What is there in our experience to say to us that the system that we currently have now is so deficient, so wanting, that we need to go to these kinds of draconian and extreme measures? I'm saying there's absolutely no evidence of that. So if somebody believes that these kinds of extreme measures are merited, they now need to make the case to us and convince us. It should not be the other way around, that we have to make a case for the maintenance of the system that we currently have. We have a system that has served us well. We have not experienced, in the 52 years of operating that system, we have not experienced any crises that
suggest times are changing.
Radical need for changing. So I'm saying the people who believe that this new kind of regime, because if this regime is implemented, we're talking about a significantly different Barbados from the Barbados we have experienced over the last 52 years. You're now talking about a Barbados. Now, let's read the title of this act, right? This bill, Objects and Reasons, this bill would amend the Police Act to increase the statutory powers granted to the commissioner and the force with the use of cordons and curfews. We are talking about a very different Barbados. We are talking about a Barbados in which the police authorities will be able to, at any moment, with no advance warning, simply to declare certain communities. And I can assure you, they are not going to be the upper class and upper middle class communities of Barbados. They are going to be the working class communities. So simply, without any warning, declare that a curfew exists in these communities, that the entire populace of those communities must get off the streets, must go to their homes and premises, must remain in those homes and premises. Police officers will descend on those communities. Those communities will be patrolled. People will be stopped. People will be searched. Homes and premises will be searched. Motor vehicles will be stopped and searched. And the act goes on to say that anybody found guilty of using insulting or abusive language to a police officer in that kind of stressful curfew environment, if found guilty, is liable to a maximum fine of $10,000 or three years imprisonment or both. Now, this is an increase from under existing legislation. The use of insulting or abusive language to a police officer can earn you a maximum fine of $1,000 and 12 months imprisonment. So you're also ratcheting up. You're also ratcheting up the penalties that will be applied to anybody who runs afoul of the police in those circumstances. So all I'm saying is we are talking about a significantly different kind of Barbados.
All right,
and
Mr. Cummings,
if we are going to have that significantly mm-hmm. different kind of Barbados, let all of us be aware of it and mm-hmm. let us make a conscious and informed collective decision.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cummings. I'll just share one WhatsApp here with you. Mr. Price asked Mr. Cummings Young, where was he last year when there were so many murders and drive-by shootings? Should we wait until it is out of control? That is what has happened in Jamaica.
Should we wait until it is out of control?
Yes.
No, I don't envisage. I don't propose waiting until anything is out of control. I am simply saying, if we feel that we have a crime situation that we need to address, then let us put our collective minds to work on mm-hmm. how we address that. But
what would you like Barbadians to do at this point? What
current?
Can Barbadians do at this point? It's going to be debated in the Senate tomorrow. What can Barbadians do?
Well, Barbadians can support the independent senators. This matter first came before the Senate last Wednesday, and at least three of the independent senators, persons of the quality of Sir Roy Trotman, Sir Henry Fraser, Senator John Watson, have all decried the lack of consultation with the people of Barbados, and have called upon the government not to proceed with enacting this bill, instead to send it through a process of national consultation. The president of the Bar Association has also spoken out and has bemoaned the fact that the Bar Association of Barbados was never informed about this bill, was not consulted, and she too is calling for some period of consultation on it. So I'm saying that Barbadians need to follow the lead of the independent senators to call on the to say to the government, this is not right. This bill is too sensitive to be enacted without there being a process of national consultation, without ordinary citizens having the opportunity to discuss it and to make their views known. And a sensible government would listen to that kind of very rational and reasonable appeal. After all, this is supposed to be a democracy.
And David, if the Senate does approve the bill tomorrow, what can Barbadians do? I mean, realistically, what can we do?
There are two things. If the Senate does go ahead, because, of course, there are 12 government senators, there are only 7 independents and 2 opposition, so the government always has the majority. And so the government can pass it no matter what the independent senators say or do. But if that happens, but the Barbadian people still go on to make their displeasure known, perhaps you could have a situation where, even though the law has been enacted, that the government could feel pressured into not proclaiming it for fear of arousing the ire of the Barbadian people. That's one scenario. The other scenario would be that the thing is proclaimed, the thing is enacted, and you have to wait until elections, a new government, to repeal the act.
All right. Thank you very much, David. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, and we look forward to talking to you more about this as it develops. Thank you. Have a great day. We'll take a commercial break, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. Remember, we go until 1 today, and I'll just start with a WhatsApp first. Say, good morning, Mr. Price. Kindly inquire from Mr. David Combs-Young if this is not a different kind of Barbados that we are living in. There's no need for the lot of long talk. What are we waiting for? To become like Jamaica and Trinidad? If you are a law-abiding citizen, what is your fear? But I see a picture of a lady here, so I'm going to assume it's a woman. The fear is, and Mr. Combs-Young explained this, when there's a curfew, when an area is cordoned off and there's a curfew, everyone, every single person, every single home in that area, whether you are a delinquent, you are a vagabond, or you are a decent citizen, you are subjected to the rules and regulations under that curfew. That, in other words, as a nice church-going person, the police can if the police suspect your home, there's somebody in your home doing something, they can come, they can search your house without a warrant. And they can search you, your person, your vehicle, etc. So it is a larger issue than just being a good person. I think this is something that has to be discussed. As a people, we need to start talking about these issues. Anyway, we go to the phone lines because I'm sure some people would want to comment. This is Brass Tacks. Good morning. You are on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Price.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm well. And you?
Good. I can't complain. What made no sense?
Well, it wouldn't make any sense if somebody can be listening, you know?
I don't even want nobody to listen because I'm a happy person.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. What I want to say, I got mixed up with something that the Prime Minister said last night on the TV in the news when he stated that he don't want the government workers alone to bear the brunt of the economy. So I want to find out, when he said that, the government workers did not get a raise for 10 years. They are still doing it alone. If he is speaking about the newly appointments that he are going to give, the people that are appointed is still bearing it, that did not get the raise. So he got me mixed up there. Could you give me some clarity, please?
Well, I am not going to give you clarity. I have two guests. I remember I told you when one is Ms. Delcia Burke. She's the Deputy General Secretary of the National Union of Public Workers. And the other is Mr. Asokori Beckles, who is the Treasurer of the NUPW. And what I will do is let them respond to you on this one. Delcia, you want to take this one? You didn't hear? Oh, she's basically saying, okay, you want to repeat because they have their microphones on now.
Yes, I could.
Yes.
I'm trying to find out. Mm-hmm. I heard the Prime Minister say last night when he spoke about giving the people the appointments the 1st of March, he said that he don't want the government workers to bear the brunt of the problem now in the economy. So if he's giving the younger people the appointments, the people that are appointed is still bearing it because they did not get an increase for 10 years. So he had me mixed up.
Yeah, he had me mixed up too. The people in the public service, the persons in the public service who are not appointed, I'm sure will be very happy to hear that what the Prime Minister said.
Thank you.
That was one of our proposals to the government, our non-salary proposals to the government, that persons with 3 years service or more be appointed. I think after the massive layoffs in the public service, persons were extremely anxious. And therefore, we felt that one of the things we should do is to try as far as possible and get persons with at least 3 years of service. I don't think you have anybody with less than that after the layoffs, so that most people in the public service would be appointed and feel some sense of security. But you're right. Public servants are still feeling the brunt. After not having an increase for 9 years, an appointment is okay, yes, I feel a bit of security, but the public servants are still suffering. They have not received an increase since 2010. So yes, I agree with you. Why we
I believe.
And thank him for the appointments. People want money.
I feel happy for those persons that are getting appointed because that since about 10 years, I knew people that wanted loans for houses and different things. And because that working 10 and 13 years before appointed, they couldn't get loans for cars, house, or anything.
Yeah.
So I welcome those appointments right now with open arms. But my problem is that it hasn't done anything for the civil service as he's speaking. Because those appointments is nothing to do with a salary. So at the end of the day, these civil servants are still carrying the brunt themselves. So he has me all mixed up.
He has me all mixed up too. The NUPW would have submitted proposals since 2016. We submitted salaries and non-salaried proposals. The government sat down with us and they went through all the non-salaried proposals. We are hearing people out there saying the government has no money. We have not been told that. We have been told by the person charged with negotiating on behalf of the government that he has no mandate. So he has me a little bit confused.
I have one more point. Can I see?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes. My next point is that I know Belgians are more sensible and more smarter. This is twice or three times that I can remember. Every time election comes around, you get promised with the conveyance from National Housing. You get promised with all sorts of things. Why it is that people have to suffer until election? Those conveyances were promised over 10 years, and plus these appointments with the 3 years were promised a long time. Why have to wait till the month before election? Patients are smarter than that. When you get the conveyance and you get the appointments, you're still suffering. Patients are not foolish. Everything is on a platform for election. Give these people these things in time. You know how much people suffer not getting a loan to get a house or a car because of waiting before an appointment, the banks keep on turning them back. Well, you are going to speak about it now with authority, now at election time. These people suffer for 10 years, can't get a house. And the houses that were built are not low-income houses. Certain people cannot apply for them. They will tell you, bring your boyfriend, bring your husband, bring somebody your salary are not big enough. And all of that happened 10 years ago and caused these people now to be looking for houses. No NRSL, or what its name, is on the material.
NRSL, yes.
And RSL is on the material. But when people could have gotten houses at a cheaper rate, the cement ain't cheap, the loans that they wanted, the appointments had them on hold. What the Prime Minister is thinking? Come on, business are smarter than that.
Well,
come
ma'am.
On.
All right. Thank you very much for your contribution. We take one more call before we go to our guest.
Yeah.
You're okay. On the Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Yes,
you're on the air.
May I have Mr. Price?
Yes, sir.
I am calling really to make a report that there is a burst water main in the 4th Avenue Crystal Crest in Kingsland. And this burst occurred, I believe it was night before or so. But the water's been gushing now. This is at least now going to the second day. The different residents have been calling the water authority. And they're saying they're aware, but nobody is coming to fix the problem. And, you know, this is not the first time I had to call in on matters like these. And other people, you know, just calling from time to time. And I wonder, everybody is talking about more and more pay, increasing pay, and this. But when are people going to do the work? I mean, people will say they want the Prime Minister to come and fix this. And the Prime Minister to come and fix that. But this work is people getting paid. We want increasing pay. You're talking about you ain't get paid for 10 years. And in 10 years, you can't come and do the people work. Every day, this is the same thing going on and on. When is this water in Kingsland going to be resolved, the problem? You may get your lady to come out and talk, but sometimes that kind of communication is not sufficient because we can get a communication coming to tell us, well, look, you can't get it fixed today. But the communication we want is that we would get it fixed. I would prefer action rather than the talk, tell the honest truth. I can imagine somebody wanted to go work, more than one person wanted to go work this morning who leave early, I mean, they're walking. they had to walk up the village all around to get the best road, just because the bottom section of the road flooded out. Pure water running down the street. Where are we going to get this fixed, Mr. Price? You could help me with this.
Well, you just transmitted it for at least 40,000 Barbadians, and I'm sure the Water Authority is listening in right now. And you're saying it's First Avenue, Crystal Crescent.
Fourth Avenue, Crystal Crescent. Kingsland Terrace. Yeah, and the Water Authority, people who were with the CMB Union there, fighting for some money the other day. They got about $30 million from a handful of people. Every man could go and buy an SUV, and then they can't get work to come and do the people work.
But no. You can't say so, because you don't know the whole process. What I'm saying is that the complaint would have been made, all right? And you don't know what extenuating circumstances there are at the time. I mean, there may not be any trucks, there may not be any people working. I don't know. So you just can't paint it with just a broad brush. That's like saying all civil servants are lazy and everybody in civil service are money. You just can't do that.
About these extenuating
circumstances.
But you know, everybody always got an excuse for everything, right? But these kind of complaints is coming on VOB regularly, you know, over the years. You mean they ain't got nothing? But instead of taking $30 million...
And I think, sir, that has a lot to do with the management systems you have in place. I mean, let's be realistic, okay?
Yeah.
If you say these complaints coming regularly. Now, yeah. If there is a management system in place where you know you're getting X amount of complaints, because all these things can be tracked. In fact...
Right.
I used to work in the distribution section. This is back in it was the first and only job I ever had in public service, and it was for 2 years, and it was from 1979, I think, to 81. Okay? When complaints come in, they come through the complaints department. At least that's that old system. I suspect it's very similar.
Right.
And everything is logged.
Right.
Back then and until now, everything was logged. And then you take these complaints, you pass them on to the superintendent in charge. And normally they would act on them, all right? But one of the problems that they always used to have was availability in getting crews in time to do these things.
Well, there's an anomaly, Mr. Price, because the Water Authority is very, very, very efficient when it comes into turning off poor people water for $20 or $30. Very efficient. Your crew don't miss you.
But sir,
if you miss by $20 today, your water off. Tomorrow,
yeah, but that's two separate departments. Don't get that. It's two separate departments. All right. It's two separate departments. People always make the mistake and say it's one big company. I mean, when I used to work at the Nation, the same thing. Why the newspaper saying, why the advertising doing this, when the editorial department doing X? No, it's a big company. So there's no, don't cross-fertilize it. Don't do that. Okay?
Well, okay.
The point is this. Hold on, sir. The point is this.
Yeah.
There are always extenuating circumstances. You are saying that the water is running there. You may not be aware, and I certainly am not aware, but sometimes you would have a very bad burst one area, and you know it's bad.
Right.
But you know, at the same time, there are five or six other bursts going on that are even worse, that are impacting even more people. They have to prioritize as well. I am not looking for excuse. I'm just, from based on my experience, I know this happens.
It's just like
there's an instant, let's say that two men and they're fighting bad. Okay?
Yeah.
Guys get hurt. Somebody call the police.
Right.
The police don't come for another hour and a half. But you know, they went to a stabbing.
Yeah? And the same happens
with the ambulance. You have to prioritize. If somebody, hold a second. If somebody gets shot and they're dead, all right?
Yeah.
Or there is a road accident and the person dies. The person is dead. I mean, this sounds cold, but the reality is the person is dead. They're not going anywhere. So that person will not take priority for an ambulance, for example. Uh-huh. As against somebody who is bleeding and is alive. So you need to save that other person's life.
You have to prioritize
these things.
But I understand the prioritization, but communication is important. But tell me when they call you, we cannot come and fix it because all the trucks are out or because we delivered another matter.
But the individual communication is important, and I agree with you. It would be great if the person who's handling those complaints can say so. But sometimes that person may not know, and that's where the internal communication is a problem. That's why I keep saying it's a management thing. Right? Don't blame the workers like that. It's usually a management thing. They don't have the proper systems in place.
All right, but well, the systems weren't altering. But the other thing is this. If you find that you have major problems like these, you said no trucks this morning in one department. They're all men and they're capable of fixing the problem. If this division got men cutting off this morning and you got a burst man, divert them from this division to go and fix the water and then do the cutting off another day.
I will give you
that's
another.
That's management too.
Well, fine. And I will give you another one, right?
Yeah.
The area is Kingsland Terrace.
Yes.
Suppose you need a compressor to get to that main, all right? Because if the guys know that basically when they go in the room that has all the main connections up, they will see, okay, Crystal Crescent, Kingsland Terrace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
There is just a 4-inch or 5-inch main there. That main is really buried in X amount of soil and rock. So therefore, we need a compressor. They may only have one or two compressors. A lot of the compressors now may be in use dealing with something else that is also important, and they can't redeploy that easily. So there are always different reasons.
That's the problem for me.
Right, and that is where the communication from the water authority on this matter would be helpful. But right. What you cannot come and do is come and say that the civil servants ain't doing X, Y, or Z. All right?
Okay, then.
Okay,
all
my
right.
Friend, thank you. We got to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back with the folks from the National Union of Public Workers.